No.
Nope.
Can
this
we
is
have
the
a roll?
Operator. At this time, this call is being recorded, and you may begin.
Ah, okay.
Thank you. And can we have a roll call?
Yes, I'll do that. Good morning, good afternoon to everyone. On today's call, we have Alan Greenberg, Tatiana Kramtsova, Cheryl Langdonor, Michaela Nalon, Ron Wickersham, James Bladell, Mike O'Connor, Jeffrey Eckhaus, Barry Cobb, Paul Diaz, Sergei Gorbunov, Ted Suzuki, Elaine Doolin, Mason Cole, Michael Young. From staff, we have Margie Milam, Marika Konings, myself, Gisela Gruber-White, and apologies, we have Karim Atumani, Davina Meigs, William McKellicott, and Avery Doria. And if I could please just remind everyone to state their names when they speak for transcription purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Alan.
Thank you, Gisela. Okay. We are using the Adobe chat room. I will try to keep an eye on people's hands up. If you are on the call but not on the chat room, then try to get in at any given moment when there's a break in the conversation and say you'd be like to be on the speaker's list, and I'll try to handle things in order. If someone notices I'm ignoring hands up because I'm focusing on something else, please let me know. All right. The first part of the agenda is to try to finalize the registrar survey. Although we've made a lot of progress on it, it seems to be taking forever, and I'd like to the extent possible, get through it today so we can start working on doing more substantive work as we go ahead. A new version went out yesterday, I suspect, from Marika, and I would like to go over that quickly and see whether there's any outstanding issues that we have to address. Other than the particular ones that we deferred until a future time. However, we did start a discussion on email and with regarding a comment that Michael Young made regarding the RGP. And before we go forward, I'd like him to clarify what he meant, because as I read the email, he said we want to make the RGP work as it was originally intended to, which implies the name has to be deleted because the RGP doesn't kick in until then. And before the recording started, he was trying to elaborate on that and say what he really meant. So,
sure.
I'd like to understand that.
Basically, Alan, what I'm saying here, and I've just popped back an email as well, the list to support this. My discussion of what the RGP was intended to do isn't what it was intended to do as a hardcore function, but was what it was intended to accomplish. It was intended to accomplish a couple of things, and the discussions back then were how do we get the attention of the registrant when a name's expired? How do we provide them additional layer of protection? And those were the couple of core intentions. And so RGP was created as an artifact, a functional artifact, to try and address those two issues. Now, what I think you're doing is jumping to the natural assumption that RGP is defined by how it works currently. And I don't see RGP as being defined as how it currently works. How it currently works probably is no longer effective to accomplish what RGP was supposed to do. Does that make sense?
Yeah, okay. So what I think you're saying is you want to revert back to the intent of the RGP, which was, number one, to make sure you do something which is, to the extent possible, going to get the attention of the registrant.
Right.
In the case of the RGP, by making sure it went black.
Right.
And number two, give them a reasonable period of time in which to do something. Now, with the RGP, that time was anywhere from 30 days if the registrar deleted the name immediately up until a maximum of 75 days,
well,
during which the registrant had time to reclaim. And I'm not saying we replicate that exactly, but that was the mechanism that the RGP provided.
Well, in combination with the auto-renew grace period, that's what effectively came out of it. But the RGP itself, like exclusive of the auto-renew, was only ever defined as a 30-day period.
Right, but it was 30 days after deletion, which could have taken place anywhere from 0 to 45 days after
Correct.
Expiration. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I think I understand your email, and it was sufficiently different from some of the other things that were being said. I wanted to make sure that was clear before we went on with this conversation. Okay, if we can go back to the survey, we made a number of both cosmetic and functional changes. And how would the group like to do this? Do you want to go over them one by one, or do you simply want me to assume people have read it and identified the things they don't like and take exceptions? Is there any strong feelings? My preference, I think, is to quickly read them or read a summary of each one and make sure that we have positive acknowledgement as we go ahead. Does that sound reasonable?
Silence is acceptance.
Silence is acceptance. Okay. Well, silence could also be everyone dropped off the call. Or I've dropped off the call and didn't know it yet. Okay. There was a whole slew of questions, each of which could be typically answered by a yes, no, or providing a fact or something that would not be a long narrative description on what happens if the registrant is silent at expiration time. First one, does the registrar allow the domain name to auto-renew in those registries that employ the policy? This is not something the registrant sees, but there has been an interest in knowing whether that's the case or not. And I don't presume there's any harm in asking. When and how are notices of expiration sent to the original the registrant at expiration prior to expiration? If a reseller is involved, are the notices sent from the reseller or the registrar?
Alan, you have a hand up.
Ah, yes. Ron, thank you.
Actually, my question comes to the methodology area above it, which is, as I understand, originally I thought these survey questions were going to be sent to the registrars. But am I now to understand that there's a group going to try to do it from the web pages?
Yes.
And then give a report back?
What we decided a couple of meetings ago was a modest number of people of registrars, if we pick them reasonably well, will cover a very large number of registrants.
Okay.
And we did not want to have too large a group because it's going to take too long to do and take too long to collate. So I think we ended up, Marika can correct me, with a number like 10 or 20 as the first pass, and then we could decide at that point whether we needed any more or not.
Okay, but these questionnaires won't be sent to the registrars
initially. They'll not be our
own internal group.
Yeah, they will not simply be sent out because that would add a significant amount of time and the percentage that would respond would probably be small. We would attempt to gather as much data as we could from websites and then fill that out with personal discussions.
Got it.
I believe is what we were talking about. Marika, is that reasonably close to what you thought?
Yes, I think that's correct. The idea would be you need to try to find what information is publicly available and then to work hopefully with many of the registrars that are participating in this group to find that actual information that is missing from the public domain.
Yeah. I mean, from my point of view, I think one of the things we are going to get out of it, which is important to know, is that there is a wide variation in practices amongst registrars, that it's not a very monolithic set of processes that are followed, and I think that's an important issue that we have to wrestle with as we go ahead with this.
Right. Yeah, some of the questions, though, seem to or to dig deeper than what's publicly available and seem to be addressed to the registrar to reveal stuff that may not be on the public webpage.
Well,
as we
go through them, if you can identify those, and we either need to justify why we're doing it and make sure it's reasonable, though we do not want to do things which are likely to discourage registrars from participating.
Agreed.
On the other hand, there may well be information that's important for us in trying to do follow this process through. Okay, so the first one is what notices do you send before expiration? The second one is what notices are sent following expiration? And are they sent from the reseller if a reseller was involved? The next question is, under what does the registrar make changes to WHOIS data? And we're talking about substantial changes typically meaning the name, the contact names and addresses. That is, who is the registrant of record at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So we know there are some things such as expiration date, which will change automatically when the domain is renewed, as it typically will be for an extra year. We are not looking at those changes. The next question is the cost to the registrant to recover the name, how does this relate to the cost that that they simply would have paid if they had done it before expiration? And if it varies, under what conditions does it vary? Now, one of the things that was inserted at the last meeting, or because of the last meeting, is one of the variables the cost of recovery for the registrar. And I cannot recall, maybe somebody else does, why we added this. There is a cost to the registrar, an out-of-pocket cost to the registrar, if it goes into the RGP. But prior to that, I'm not aware of out-of-pocket costs that are associated with that.
Alan, this is James.
I was
behind getting that inserted. And the reason being that while there may not be a direct dollar cost to a registry, there is a cost burden, so maybe that's a better phrase, cost burden to a registrar in recovering a name when it's in that front.
I can live with that if we insert that word. I just wanted to make sure it was inserted intentionally and not misinserted in the wrong place. Okay. Next,
could you just repeat which word you would like to see inserted?
Cost burden.
Okay.
And delete my whole square bracket comment. The next point was, at what point after expiration is the DNS changed so the domain name no longer resolves to the original website? Now, we're not asking at that point whether it goes black, resolves to a pay-per-click page or whatever, but it no longer resolves to the RAE site. Now, I worded that question, I have a question for you. If a registrar, and I'm not saying anyone does, but I've had discussions with registrars saying they could do this, if the registrar changes the domain name to point to their own site, which in turn passes control back to the website, is that caught by the wording I'm asking here? So the situation there would be, to a visitor to the website, it looks no different. But the registrar is, in fact, intercepting the traffic and counting it.
Hey, Alan, it's Jeff. I'm unsure. I don't know. Maybe I'm not sure of the question. So you're saying if I have my site up that, you know, about cats or whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
saying that, and I'm a registrant, and then I have it registered with whatever, ABC domains or whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
they're a registrar, that they would, but you're saying if the hosting is with that registrar and...
No.
Can you explain?
Yes, certainly. James, may I use GoDaddy as an example? Not claiming you do this. If I have a domain, cats.org, registered with GoDaddy, it expires. GoDaddy has the technical ability to point the domain name at a GoDaddy server, which then redirects it to my cat's website. To a visitor, it looks like cats is still working if they're not carefully watching the headers.
Yeah, it's
but the traffic. But the traffic is going through GoDaddy.
So it's Jeff here. Just one thing is that that's a technical issue, because unless the hosting is with that person is with that registrar, and if the hosting has not expired, because if not, the hosting is it's hosted on a separate site. On it could be hosted, let's call it at Rackspace.
That's
and,
right.
Yeah. So that person it would have to go hand in hand because of you would need the IP addresses and then having to change the host records. It's probably technically possible, but it would have to be, I don't even know if it's technically possible.
I wasn't asking if it's technically possible. I know it's technically possible. I was asking, do you believe that the wording of this is the DNS changed so the domain name no longer resolves to the RAE's website? In other words, if cats.org used to point to 1.1.1.1 and now points somewhere else, I believe the answer is to this question is yes, we have changed it. Even if it still looks to the user as if the website is unchanged. I just want agreement that that's what we're talking about. So I'm saying really, if the DNS has changed, then the answer to this is yes, we changed it.
Yeah, I'd just like to say, I see what you're driving at with the question, but there's still this distinction between the DNS is unclear because you have the DNS records in the root and where they point to for that domain. And then the other thing that you've brought up is the possibility that a hosting company can change the zone records. But these are two completely different things that affect recovery differently. So that technical distinction between the DNS... The DNS, to me, implies the root zones, and a zone change at a registrar.
Okay, I'm going to suggest that we ignore the whole example I gave.
Mm-hmm.
The intent of this question is, if you do a DNS query, the A record comes back than it was the day before expiration.
Okay, I understand what your intention is now.
Okay, and I think I just want to make sure the wording is correct for that.
Alan, it's Mason. You got a couple of hands up, and then I'd like to be cued, please.
Problem when I look at the paper, Michele. Mm-hmm. The only hand I see up right now.
Yeah, I'm completely confused by your question.
Then forget the whole question. Let's erase the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, because I'm trying to understand what the intention is of your question. Is that you're talking about two things that I can't see as being compatible. If you change the name servers of the domain, the likelihood of it pointing to the original website is slim to none, as far as I'm concerned. So I don't really understand. I don't really understand what you're talking about.
As I said, if you'll forgive me, I can explain offline or when we meet. But it's not really important right now. I just wanted to make sure the intent of this bullet was that if the A record changes, it provides a different answer than it did before expiration, then the answer is yes, we changed it.
So in simple terms, you're saying it's on before expiry, it's pointing to whatever the hell it's pointing to, and post-expiry, it's pointing somewhere else.
If it's pointing somewhere else, then I'm asking at what point was... We're asking at what point was this changed?
Okay.
The answer might be never. We didn't change it. We don't change it.
Huh.
Okay.
Okay.
The follow-on question is at this point.
Sorry, Alan. It's
yes.
Mason. Can I ask a question on that previous question?
Yes, certainly. Sorry.
So what would the answer to that question give you in terms of information about helping a registrant get a name that maybe he unintentionally let go?
One of the scenarios that has been discussed is a registrar that does not change DNS during the post-expiration process.
Mm-hmm.
That is, there is no visual clue user that anything has happened. So that goes back to what Michael Young was saying before of the 30-day period during RJP makes the website go black.
I understand. Okay. All right. All right.
Which is something hard to ignore if you're awake at all.
All right. I'm with you.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Yeah. In that regard, I think we have to make a distinction between whether an A record, which appears in a zone, or whether the root things pointing to the name server changes. I think that technical issue is at the heart of what you're saying. The registrar doesn't control acting as a registrar. They don't act as someone who controls the A record. It may be a registrar acting as a hosting company, but
the gist of what I was saying was trying to not have to have different questions based on whether the registrar hosts the DNS that is in use or not.
Right, but if they're not going to
change... It doesn't matter who's the authority on for that domain name.
Mm-hmm.
The question is what comes back.
I get what your goal is, but I think we really need to ask whether or not the root servers are changed to point to a different name server or not, because that's the real clue that's been traditionally used.
But that does not catch the case where the DNS that the registrant is using is hosted by the registrar, who can then change the A record without changing the root zone.
Right, if they choose not to change the
right.
root zone. So the important thing is, did they change the root zone or not? So, yeah. Oh, okay.
If you don't change the root, I mean, sorry. I think part of the problem...
Who's speaking? Is Michele?
Sorry, it's Michele here.
Okay.
I think part of the problem is the way the question is worded.
Well, that's why I was trying to make sure it's worded reasonably.
Well, no, I think if you just made it a little bit more explicit as into, as an explain, i.e., it no longer resolves to the original web page. It actually says that, though. So I don't know why it's causing so much confusion. Is it the term DNS that is causing all this problem with the root zone query?
Yeah, that's the problem. This is Ron Wickersham again. Yeah, that's the problem to me, that as far as looking down the road, formulating a policy suggestion, that it makes a difference whether the root zones were ever changed or not. So collecting information to that regard makes it clearer what we can make a policy recommendation.
Perhaps, maybe I'm missing something. If my website is pointing to 1.1.1.1, you change the root zone to point to a different
Yes, when it's deleted from the root zone, then there's no name server associated with that domain, and it goes dark.
But if you now point it to your name server as the authority and put an A record in your...
But I have no way, if it's been hosted somewhere else, I have no way other than if I'm busy spending time looking at who's hosting my customer's domains, I have no way of recreating that zone. They may have additional things that's necessary for their web page. It may not be just an A record for www. It may be another one for images. Or forum. Or wiki. And I have no way of knowing if all of those are recreated or not in this distant zone
The gist of why this question was added, if we go back to the start of this, is asking, does someone who is coming in and trying to use the website, whether it's the registrant or someone else, see a difference.
Mm-hmm.
So what the root zone says and who is the authority on this domain doesn't really matter.
For the purpose of the question. Okay. As long as we cover that somewhere else, if changes are made in the root zone, I think we need to be aware of whether changes are made in the root zone or not.
Okay. I have no problem asking that as a separate question. But
okay,
one can make changes in the root zone and still end up with the same end result from a user's perspective.
Okay.
And at that point, to some extent, it can be completely moot. I mean, if you revamp all of your domain servers, you may make a change in the root zone, but it doesn't change the end result.
Right, but if it's deleted in the root zone, then it goes dead.
And that's certainly a change. All right, if anyone is not happy with the wording there, then let's propose something else on the list.
Okay.
Let's not try to wordsmith it right now. The next question says, at this point, which says something has changed, where does it point? And we've gone through a number of words. I think that what is there right now is what was proposed during the last meeting.
Alan, this is James.
Okay.
Yes, please, James. Go ahead.
Yes, and and maybe my memory is faulty, but I thought we were going to not necessarily get into the construction of a new page, just essentially say it was going to post to something else. I think that was the...
I think what we said last time is we didn't want to offer suggestions.
Right.
But we wanted to ask a more open-ended question, and the pay-per-click was an example.
I recall Jeff and I were discussing some alternative language to not necessarily get into what was or was not on the new page, just what, you know, where did it go, and let them describe it, as you're saying, not offer any...
I did have one specific comment, that the wording that Marika captured was, does it point to the original page or a different page? And I think since this question is prefixed saying... we're only talking about when it's pointing somewhere else. We don't need the original page or a different page there on the first line.
Since we've already established that it's pointing somewhere else.
That's right. So I think we're saying, does it point, or I think the wording then would have to be, instead of please specify, where does it point? Example, a paperclip page. Is that acceptable to all?
Yeah.
Okay. The next question goes back to the issue of does the registrant or someone else looking at the page understand what's happening and saying does the new page explicitly say that the registration has expired and how it should be reclaimed? I think that's a very important issue from the point of view of the registrant and someone else going to the page who may want to alert the registrant.
Yeah, good question. So, hi for that.
Okay, then we go into go away from the web, remembering that domain names can be used for a whole multitude of things, but the primary ones that we can ask targeted questions are are the web, which we've just done, and email. And the next set of questions have to do with what happens to the email, essentially. One can imagine a number of different scenarios that it can get redirected somewhere else. It can continue going to the original registrant through use of an MX record, even if the website is redirected. It can go into a black hole. It can bounce. Sorry, James.
Sorry, Mason, did you want to go or?
Nope, I was pointing to your hand up.
Okay.
Thanks. The wording of this particular question, and I think we've touched on this issue before, is because, you know, just the nature of email, a registrar cannot ensure delivery. So I think, you know, we should probably necessarily, you know, does the name stop being delivered? I think that we can say at what point, you know, things are sent and what actions a registrar may or may not do to, you know, to increase the likelihood of delivery.
Just for the record, the first question, the one starting at what point has been we are proposing has been replaced by the next two bullets.
The entire first question will be stricken and replaced by the next two bullets?
If the RAE and if the RAE.
There's a parenthetical in the middle which says that.
Okay.
I think the questions still have the problem you're talking about, but nevertheless.
Go ahead. I'll let. I saw someone else with their hand up, so I'll drop out of the queue.
Well, everyone is down now. Paul had his hand up, but it's gone.
I guess I'll just weigh in because I was fine with what James was saying. This is Paul.
Yeah.
What James was saying, and then I got a little confused by what you just added, Alan. If you can redirect, you're suggesting what?
Okay. The bullet that is at the top of a page, at least top of my page, which says.
Right.
At the point, at what point does email
mm-hmm.
is struck, and in its place, there are two new bullets, both of which start with the RAE. If the RAE.
Okay, then I do have a question, if I may. I think we need to clarify here if the registrar is not hosting the DNS. I don't know how we would determine that, other than the fact that we'll get a bounce if we send an email. But
okay, just for the record, DNA should be DNS, of course.
Can we clarify the question a little bit?
Well, the question came up last time of how can an MX record be left in place if the website points somewhere differently. And after a little bit of to and fro, we realized that there are two different scenarios. One is where the DNS managed by perhaps the reseller or web hoster is being used. And the other case is when the DNS is not associated with the registrar, in which case you must move all or nothing. Does that make any more sense?
No.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't think so. And I think we'll need to insert that in your new bullet point beginning, if the REs, et cetera. And we're going to have to make that clearer because as a registrar that's looking to try and respond to this, we're going to be left scratching our heads saying, if we don't have control over the DNS, we can't answer it. Maybe that's a response you're looking for.
Well, the first bullet, the first new one says, if the RAE has been using the registrar's or reseller's own DNS. If they haven't, then they don't answer that question at all.
Sorry, that's a formatting. Since it starts further up, I thought it was all from the previous. Okay. I see that now you say there are two questions that come out of it instead of one.
Sorry, that was just a formatting. I'm trying to show the logic of how we got to the revisions. Michele?
Yeah, I'm just reading all this stuff here about the email, and I'm just, my head's going to explode. you're going to have to get rid of any reference to the term deliver with anything involving email. Sending is one thing, as already been stated, there's no way for anybody to know if it's been delivered or not. Asking any registrar to keep track of bounces and everything else is completely unreasonable.
No, that certainly wasn't the intent. The intent was, if I send email to X at the domain that is now in question, the one that has expired, one of several things can happen. It can still be targeted at the original place. Now, whether it works or not, you know, depends on the idiosyncrasies of the internet. That wasn't what the issue was. The issue was, is there still an A or an MX record which says try to deliver it to the original place? In the absence of that happening, is it going somewhere where the answer will be sorry that user doesn't exist here anymore, or will it just go into a black hole?
But I don't understand what use the answer to that question is.
Well, it has exactly the same use as the questions related to the website. If you have a domain name which is not being used for a website, but is used being purely used for email, as an example, what happens? What message do you get back that it has expired?
Okay, but is this in reference to a third party trying to send email to the domain name, or is this in reference to the registrar sending email to the domain name?
No, this is the first bullet is in reference to a third party.
Okay.
Or are you sending email to yourself? But the question is, if mail is directed at an email address using the domain name that has expired, what happens based on the changes, if any, that the registrar has made?
We're not
talking about the reliability of the internet. We're talking about what is the intent of the changes. I welcome better wording.
Yeah. I think you just said it.
Did anyone capture it?
It's in the transcript. God bless MP3.
Okay, if we go back to the transcript and try to capture that, is everyone happy?
Yeah. May I ask if, could we possibly make one little change, which is this email directed says a whole bunch of intermediate steps. I think what you really mean to say is email address to the domain name.
Oh.
And that would... I consider that
a friendly amendment.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyone else want to have a go at this before we go on to the next one?
Yeah, this is Tim.
Yeah.
Alan.
Oh, welcome,
Tim. Sorry I joined late. You might even want to use that term third party so that it's clear that this question is not about email that the registrar is sending, but email that others are sending. And then, you know, just a note, when we get back, when we actually do this survey and we get back responses, we
may have to tweak the questions.
Yeah, because I think we might find there's other things that aren't quite as clear as we think they could be. And or we may have to look at other sources, too, for some of the information. I have a feeling that there's probably a good number of registrars who may not even know the answer to that question simply because they don't necessarily process their own email,
right.
Whether it's hosted elsewhere or not. You know, in other words, they advertise being the hoster and et cetera, but actually using third-party tools or services to provide it.
Sure. All right, Marika, I note this we were having this conversation when the wording was talked about was about 38 minutes into the call. So one of us should be able to find the exact wording at that point. Sorry, Marika?
Yeah, no, I just wanted to know where Tim wanted to use the third-party reference. If you could maybe clarify that.
Mail sent.
Yeah, I would say, you know, when third-party email addressed to the domain or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, or mail sent by a third party.
Right. Yeah, this is Ron Wickersham again. And these questions, while we keep referring in the conversation to saying they're addressed to a registrar, I believe at this time these questions are addressed to our internal panel who tries to gather this information from the website And this is a tough one to gather from a website.
This one is not likely to be gathered from the website.
Okay.
Marika has a whole room full of people back there that will be gleefully asking these questions for us.
I wish.
Gleeful is a term of art I hadn't heard in this context.
I don't know. Some of us seem pretty gleeful at the moment, but it may be just exhaustion. All right. If we can go on, the next one is, if the RAE's contact email uses the domain name in question, does the registrar factor this in sending out post-expiration reminders? This is something that was brought up in the last call of, if I have a.org registered and my contact information is a.org, does anyone notice that, or do we still gleefully try to send the mail out, which we know won't get there? That doesn't, of course, address what should be done in such a case, but that's not at the level of information gathering. Okay. The next question seems to be a follow-on to the previous one, and I'm not sure if they need to be merged into the same question. The first question, as we had it now, said at what point is mail addressed at a domain, at a specific domain name, stop being delivered, stop. Well, we didn't use the word delivered. I don't remember what I said. I think the wording that we came up to, that we're going to go back to the transcript with, now includes the question of what happens to the mail.
I think you said directed to or something like that.
Yeah. But the question of, does it bounce or discarded or redirected to another recipient? Factors in. If you give Marika and I the latitude, we'll either do this in two questions or one question, whichever we can phrase best.
Alan, it's Mason.
Yeah.
I think the answer to some of this is going to be, we have no idea. I mean, if it gets redirected to, like, if it's to a company or something like that, and a person who's responsible for the domain name and the WHOIS record leaves the employee of the company, but his or her email is forwarded to someone else in the company, we may not know that.
No, the question isn't, is it redir-? The question is not whether it goes to user X or user Y at the domain name. The question is, if you are now intercepting the traffic to go to, for instance, a pay-per-click page, what happens to the email that was going to that same domain name? That's the substance of the question.
Okay.
I mean, there are a number of issues. Number one, it's a matter of what kind of awareness is there that the email is no longer working. If it is no longer working, it could still be working. And there's a privacy issue of what are you doing with this email that was directed at someone else that you now have been able to take over. One presumes you're not sitting there at your desk reading it with glee, but that's the substance of the question.
All right.
The next question had to do with spam filters and what's the likelihood that someone will get a message. And the question was, are the reminders sent to the same address that the registrar normally uses for communication? Don't remember who added that. It may have been Mike Pelage. Or maybe somebody else.
This is Marika. I recall that someone put forward a question with in mind that I think in certain cases an email address might be filtered through the spam filter if it's not the usual address. And
yeah.
That's why the question.
No, it was spam filter related.
This is Mikey. You might want to add that to the question just to clarify the spam business.
Add a clarification that if a different address is used, it might be caught by a spam filter or something like that, just to explain why we're asking the question.
Yeah.
I think that's reasonable.
Yeah, this is Ron. Yeah, I was the one who raised that before because of an incident where post-expiration the originating email address changed and so the registrant didn't understand that these were from his registrar. They seemed to be phishing attacks.
Well, yes, indeed. I've personally seen ones where they come from a generic name, you know, domain name services or something like that, which
right.
sounds like someone phishing, but it, mm-hmm. in that particular case, it happens to be a legitimate
mm-hmm.
domain name owned by the registrar.
But all previous communications from the registrar have not had that appearance.
That, yeah, and the other issue, of course, is if the original contact was made by a reseller and the reminders are now coming from the registrar, that may be
mm-hmm.
a name no one has ever seen before also.
Agreed.
All right.
This is Mikey. I don't think any of that last paragraph of the conversation is captured by the question the way it's worded now. And, you know, I think it's really important, but it needs to be stuck in there somehow.
So you're talking about the issue that if it comes from either an unfamiliar source or a suspect-looking source, it may be either just ignored or treated as spam, something capturing that intent.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Noted. I say that blithely, and I'm hoping Marika is noting.
Good old MP3.
At what point is the expired domain name made available to others than the RE, sale, auction, whatever? Any problems with that?
I like it.
Okay. If the reseller is involved in the original transaction, how does the RAE determine whether they are dealing with a reseller or a registrar? If the RAE is dealing with a registrar, how can the RAE identify the affiliated registrar? And to recover the domain name, can the RAE work with the registrar directly or must work with the reseller? Now, some of the early questions are to some extent addressed by the new RAA in that there is a requirement to make available, not always clearly, but to make available who the registrar is if it's a reseller. But
Alan, this is James.
Yes.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to point out that I was behind this kind of clumsy compound question last week for the folks that missed the last call. Really attempting to boil down, I think, a number of questions and topics related to how resellers fit into this transaction, if indeed they do at all. So I thought perhaps structuring it in this series of appended conditionals might be the most straightforward way to do that.
Okay, thank you.
But I'm open to edits.
I think they're relatively clear and useful. I've always personally been interested in how many times does a registrant try to transfer a domain from one reseller of Registrar X to another reseller of Registrar X. I'd be curious in seeing the statistics of that. But nevertheless. Okay, next. What options are available for contacting reseller or registrar post-expiration? The question was asked because it has been noted that, particularly in the case of some resellers, but possibly registrars also, they don't even provide a telephone number. And they only provide email or a web form. And if you're trying to do something urgently, that's not necessarily the way to get quick action. And perhaps lastly, under what conditions is the domain name actually deleted and enters the RGP? Are we happy now that these are, once we do the edits that we're talking about today, that these are reasonably complete and we can go ahead with it? We may, of course, learn something during the process of doing the original survey that requires us to or makes us want to change something. But are we moderately comfortable? This is a good start.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Cheryl. Yes.
Thank you. The second question is essentially the same scenario, but what happens if the registrant explicitly says they are not interested in renewing? And the answer could be we do exactly the same things, or maybe there was something that's done differently.
Alan, a question. It's Mason.
Yes, go ahead.
When you say explicit instructions of an intention not to renew, what is that? What's an example of that in your mind?
You send out a reminder to someone, and they come back, return it, and say, I don't want this domain name anymore. I have no intention of renewing.
Okay. So the question is, if we get that, do we still follow any of the procedures that you outline under number one?
Any of the procedures that you outlined, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can we get the attention of the operator to try to get the deadline away? Is anyone here, or is it just me?
No, I can hear you.
Okay, fine. Thank you. I thought for a moment it was just me. Okay.
A question for you, Alan?
Yes.
This is Paul. This particular question, I guess I'm just, help me think through the logic here for the questions before the working group, the charter questions. We're talking about, means to recover a name plus expiration. This question is asking, somebody says, I don't want the name anymore, and yet you're still asking what happens? I'm missing a step in the logic here. Why are we asking this question?
The reason is a number of registrars have said, if someone tells us that they really want to delete a name, we don't believe them. We know sometimes they're going to be coming back shortly thereafter and say, oops, I made a mistake, I really want it again.
This is James.
Yes, James.
And that was me, and I don't think that that's precisely what I was trying to say. It was
okay.
Close. I was trying to say something like a certain percentage will want to come back.
Okay.
And have that reversed. And so to guard against that percentage, we would, if a registrant explicitly asks to cancel a name, we do hold on to it for a brief period of time, so long as we don't cross over any grace period boundaries, to ensure that we have that is a reversible decision.
I was being flippant, inappropriate for the chair, but I was trying to say what you just said.
Okay.
This is Mikey. I've got a question.
Yes, go ahead.
What about fraud? What about a person who intercepts the email and fraudulently says no?
That perhaps is a good reason for the registrar also to not take immediate action. But we're just asking what registrars do at this point.
And again, Alan, this is Mike Palage. As someone who originally asked the question, we were trying. Part of this question also was to look at the general practices of registrars where they auto-renew all the names from their account. So this is kind of trying to get a spectrum of how they treat different domains or if they even, in fact, do treat them differently. As we heard from some of the registrars in some previous calls, notwithstanding that some registries have different billing practices regarding auto-renew, most registrars appear to follow the same practice regarding the impact on the end user, whether they do or do not get charged the renewal fee at the time of expiration.
Okay. Is there any strong objection to keeping this question here? We do need to move on. We have only a half hour more, and I really want to finish this whole questionnaire. If not, we'll move on. But Michele had his hand up still or not?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a bit concerned about some of these questions about what registrars do or don't do with domains. That's largely irrelevant. I mean, the question is whether a registrant, whether a registrant is given the opportunity to recover the domain name. What registrars are doing or not doing with domains is irrelevant.
Are you talking about a specific question at this point?
Yeah. This entire side conversation about people being interested in what registrars do with domains, I feel, is completely off topic.
Okay.
The question that's being asked, and this working group is meant to answer, is whether or not a registrant has ample opportunity to recover their domain, to renew their domain, or whatever. What business practices registrars may or may not use and why they do so is irrelevant.
Okay, but I'm not sure in respect to which of the questions on this questionnaire you're talking about.
Well, it's some of the questions that Mr. Pelage has brought up in both on the list and just now as well. I mean, it just seems to me that this questions being asked and the reason that they're being asked does not actually address what this working group's scope is meant to be. And I think that it asking too many questions about sideline topics, you're not actually going to help anybody because you're not going to get honest answers. And I should remain firmly on the ball. In other words, does the registrant have the opportunity to renew the domain? Are they given ample notification? Whether registrars are being billed, not billed, taking hits or not taking hits is irrelevant. It's got nothing to do with this.
This is Mike Pelage. So who was you speaking?
McKaylee.
Hi, McKaylee. As far as the relevance, I do think it is relevant regarding some of the operational practices, because as was documented by Christina Rosette from the IPC, when registrars, as part of the expiration practice, begin to make changes to who is information, that does have an impact on their ability to potentially timely recover a domain name. So the reason I had that question regarding what happens if someone chooses to expire a name, are they making changes to the who is? So I do think that there is some relevance. So I do take issue to your claim.
It's totally
irrelevant.
I'm going to intercede in this debate. We have two hands up, James, and then Jeff.
Yeah, just real quickly, Mike. Christina, for point of clarification, Christina Rosette's scenario described a different situation. It was not an expired name. It was a deleted name that a registrant was attempting to avoid legal action, so they deleted the name.
I would really like to have the debate about the questions we're looking at and not the side comments that people are making. Jeff, did you have something specific?
Oh, yeah. I'll let that go. I just wanted to know if somebody could send that email to the list so that we could read it to ourselves, and then I'll just leave it at that, because I agree with you. I want to move on.
This is the Christina email.
Yes.
It was sent to the list, but
I must have missed it. I'll look through my
okay,
emails again.
It wasn't sent to the list, but it's in the public comments forum.
Okay.
Oh, okay. All right, thank you.
All right. There's a parenthetical after two which relates to that question, and it is a question for this group. Do we want to ask the question of if someone terminates an agreement prior to expiration, does the registrar treat it as a delete or not? Which, if they do, do they treat it as an expiration, or do they not treat it as an expiration? Because we're asking about registrar practice on whether it falls into our working group scope or not. Did I confuse everyone with the question?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm afraid you did.
Yes.
Let me try again. In the scenario of a registrant requesting that a name be canceled, deleted, regardless of the exact terminology, the question is, what process does a registrar follow at that point? And the specific question is, do you treat this as an expiration happening early, or do you treat it as some other process?
I'm sorry, Alan, it's Mason. Are you on question five now?
No, I'm on the square brackets are on question two.
Oh.
Christina's question that she posted to the comment list talked about a registrant who had requested the name be canceled early. There was a debate on this within this working group as to whether that is deemed to be an expiration and therefore falls within our scope, or is an early cancellation and it has nothing to do with expiration whatsoever.
Hmm.
And there seemed to be some division of opinion on whether an early cancellation is by definition cancellation is by definition an early expiration and expiration rules apply, or if it is treated some other way. And I'm suggesting that we ask the question of registrars when someone cancels a name in the middle of the process, do you consider this an early expiration or not?
Alan, it's Mason. I just have a question about that, if I may. So when you say an early, you're talking about before the original expiration date of the name?
6 months into the year.
Yeah. So okay. Yeah, so if somebody calls you and says, I don't want that name anymore, cancel it. That's what you're talking about.
Now, whether that means I don't want to own it anymore or it means I expect you to delete it so that it never existed in the world, everyone has different opinions on that. The only question that I am suggesting we ask is ask the registrar, do they consider this an expiration, which therefore does fall into our domain or not? We're not saying they're right or wrong, just asking the question.
This is Mikey. I think you've done a pretty good job of pre-wording the question again in your comments. This would be another one for the NCP.
I've got to stop doing that. Okay, we are an hour and 2 minutes into the call. Is everyone okay with putting that question in? Hearing no no's, we go on.
Alan, this is Tim.
Yes.
So, well, you know, I'm not so sure. I mean, doesn't that imply sort of an expansion of the of what this group was chartered to cover, which was basically post-expiration? So, if I guess I'm not convinced completely that a request to cancel it prior to expiration is necessarily the same issue that we're dealing with here.
Well,
I think I heard Cheryl.
Yeah, thank you. I was just going to respond to Tim that I thought was the purpose of asking, should we ask the question to establish is it or is it not considered by anyone in the registry world, the registrar world, that it would be in any way, shape or form considered an expiration. If it is, then it is in our purview. If it isn't, well, no, it's not.
I have a question. It's Mason.
Yeah, my assumption is we're going to get some answers one way and some the other, and we're going to have to discuss it again. On the other hand, if no registrar in the world says they consider it an expiration, then I think we have to take that at its face value. We can debate whether we want to need to expand the scope of it if we deem it not to be an expiration, but we want to talk about it anyway. But I was just trying to ascertain, is there who thinks of this as an expiration and who does not?
I have a question, Alan.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I have two comments. One is, it seems like, I'm not an attorney, but it seems like that could be opened up for some manner of legal interpretation. My suspicion is that if you get a reply to this from registrars that you query, the reply might be, we get that so seldom that the questions are irrelevant, or B, you know, depends on how you define expiration. I think registrars generally consider expiration to be on the anniversary of the beginning, a given anniversary of the beginning of that registration.
In which case, their answer is no, we don't treat it like an expiration.
But I guess this is Tim Allen. I guess my concern is whether this is open to, you know, registrars defining what this is or not. I mean, either we're talking about a post-expiry in this group or we're not. If we're going to expand beyond that, then I think it should go back to the council for some interpretation or decision as to whether, you know, the charter should include it or not.
Okay, so you believe we should not. James had a comment.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's similar to what Tim was saying, but maybe not. I mean, it's something of the effect of, if 994 registrars say they do it one way and two say they do it the other way, what are we going to do with this information? Are we going to try to bring everybody in line one way or the other? Or if we prescribe any sort of practices or policies based on this process, then are the registrars still able to opt out by just not treating it as an expiration? I'm just trying to figure out where we're going.
I think if nothing else, we'll have some information to feed back to the person who made this particular comment and to the other people who have gone on that bandwagon that have said an early cancellation is an expiration.
Okay, I have two quick comments.
I guess I don't see the harm in asking the question.
Okay, but I just have two quick comments on that, and one is that whether we ask it here or not, I don't really have strong feelings, but you know, this possibly might be more appropriately directed at some of the folks who are looking at how folks would avoid UDRP or other types of actions. And, you know, that might be a better venue to raise this issue.
All right. I don't have any strong feelings about it. May I suggest people who feel strongly one way or another make comments to the list, and we'll try to come to closure on this in the next day or so.
Good idea.
Okay.
Yeah, Alan, this is Tim.
Yes, Tim.
I probably won't comment on it on the list. I'll just make my comment now, and that again, I'll just reiterate that I think it's an expansion of scope, and that question appropriately belongs with the council and not on the list.
This is Mike Palage, and I guess if I could respond to that, Tim, maybe this questionnaire will find some other issues that may actually require an expansion of the original charter. So perhaps let's ask the questions, let's look at the issues, and then if there is a potential expanse of the charter, we should go back to the council and ask for it. But precluding questions from being answered at this time, I don't think is constructive.
Further discussion on the list.
Oh, I just predict the answer you're going to get, but, you know, that's, I guess, your choice.
Okay, we have 15 minutes left. Next question is, are the terms of the treatment of a domain name registration at the time of expiration contained in the registration agreement or in another document? Please specify if you have not already done so in question one or two. So essentially, where is a domain registrant supposed to find out this information? If the registrar makes substantial changes to who is at the time of expiration, is the practice dependent on the TLD? I would actually change that to the time at or after expiration.
Hey, Alan, it's Jeff, can I ask a question here?
Yes, please.
On the one you just said, maybe you're saying if the registrar makes substantial changes to the who is that at the time of expiration, is that practice dependent upon the TLD? Are you saying, like, just to be simple, like com versus net? Because then you've given an example, auto-renew versus non-auto-renew. So I'm not sure of the question. Hopefully you can clarify this.
The question is what you do dependent on whether the registry charges you for that domain at expiration date or not?
Oh, I see. Okay. Can you just add that in just so it's crystal clear? Because I have a feeling, the registrars, people will be confused by that question.
We will try to clarify.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. And I would like to change it to at or after expiration. If they do it 3 days later, we're still asking the question, I think.
Well, what happens if a registrar decides to – what happens with a registrar who may want to change it, you know, 1 hour before expiration, even though the term of the registrant is up? The reason I like that at expiration was that you kind of had a – you were – I think you were, the question was originally throwing a substantial net. I like
– I don't – if you like it the way it is, it was asked at your request. I'm not sure we need the information, but it's not going to hurt us. If you're happy with the way it is, we'll leave it to be.
Thanks.
Next question is still there, is does the registrar or affiliate provide the registrant prior to expiration the right to remove the name from auction sale processes? No comments, no hands.
McKay, one question.
Yes.
Filius meaning what exactly?
I think it is loosely meant as a subsidiary or parent or sister company.
It might be a good idea to explain that, because within this market, a lot of companies would have affiliates as in affiliate marketing, which would confuse things even further.
Ah, good point. I'll ask Michael offline, who came up with the question originally, if you can come up with a better word that will satisfy Michele and your own legal definition of this. James?
You know what? I'm going to lower my hand because I just answered my own question by reading it a little more carefully. I was wondering why we weren't using RAE, but it looks like we've changed it to be registrant prior to expiration. So there is only one, and RAE is irrelevant, so I'm lowering my hand.
Ah, yes, okay. There may actually be a better term than registrant. I think the RAA uses some other expression. So there may be a question, but I think we all understand at this point. Does the registrar or affiliate we need to define affiliate similarly here, provide the registrant the ability to renew, re-register a domain name once it has entered the auction process or after completion of the auction process? If so, are the costs the same as during the auto-renew, if the costs not, so on and so forth? Essentially, we're asking, is there a drop-dead point at which an auction begins, or is there still opportunities to reclaim, and if so, what are the general financial terms? No hands, no questions.
This is Mikey. You know, every time you do that little description that summarizes the question, I always like it better than the question itself. It's just a
but I said, but I ended that. I took the last three lines and said, and so forth.
Yeah, I know. I like that.
Alan, it's Mason.
You, Mikey. Why don't you volunteer to transcribe this call for us?
Oh, it's the beauty of MP3.
Yes, Mason.
So just a word of caution, and I know this issue has been raised before, and there are differing opinions on it, but I don't think you can anticipate a lot of discussion from registrars on any kind of issue of pricing. So if you ask the question, I think you just need to be prepared for a polite decline on that question.
I would say that if registrars all politely decline to give us the parameters, not the actual absolute pricing, then that is producing, then if they won't tell us, they also won't tell the registrant, which is not providing a rather predictable and clear environment for that registrant past the point when the auction begins.
Well, I appreciate that point of view. I just want to say that I know registrars are extremely gun-shy to talk about their business practices in the presence of other competitors, whether it relates to pricing or not. And specifically when it does relate to pricing, I think you're especially going to get people who are just disinclined to say anything to stay completely on the safe side.
Any other comments? Do we have general agreement from all the registrars that we shouldn't be asking what happens as soon as the name enters an auction process, which, as I understand it, can start pretty soon after expiration in some cases?
Now, this is Tim Allen.
Yep.
I mean, asking what happens is one thing, you know, getting into details about, you know, renewal costs, and then it even goes further into, are the costs the same for all names? If not, what does it depend on? Time of renewal, estimated value, et cetera, et cetera. I guess where you're going to start running into probably not getting a whole lot of information.
But indeed, that's also the area that we have had large numbers of complaints on. That is, someone who wants to reclaim a name which has particular value based on whether it's semantic analysis of the name, pay-per-clicks, or how the auction is proceeding, may have to pay an arm and a leg compared to me renewing my no-name domain. They'll charge me $9. And that comes down to issues of predictability.
So Jeff has his hand up, but it's Mason again. I'd like to go after Jeff.
Okay, Jeff.
You can go, Mason. Go ahead. I'll go after you. Go ahead.
So I don't want to get too far into an answer here, but as a company that provides registration services and auction services and aftermarket services, I guess I question where the large number of complaints come from, where they go, and how we quantify them. Because we operate one of these services, and the scale of complaint against what I think is being alleged just doesn't exist. Now, it may be that I don't have the information that you do, but if you do have it, I'd like to see it, because it just simply does not exist operationally in our experience.
Jeff?
I was just going to go back to, sorry about that question, and just agree with Tim's response that I think that the earlier questions about having the ability to get it back, once does it go into auction? Otherwise, it sort of answers it does answer the questions that we're looking for, well, I thought we were looking for in the working group, and this question goes, I don't know if it's getting to the answers that we're looking for. And I think they'll just have some problems with the responses on this. And what I'm trying to do is, you know, for somebody who has to deal with the registrars a lot as part of the XCOM, I know the back and forth that goes on and the responses we'll get. And I'm just trying to help on this group to get clarification so that people will respond. And I think I'll agree with the others, by putting that in, you'll probably have very limited response on this. And maybe, I won't say hostility, but I just think I'll have no response on it, and I want to try and get some responses to the survey so we can move on and, you know, and try and come to some sort of resolution to this.
On reconsideration, I believe we have already asked for the salient information about this in the bullet, the earlier bullet on question one, about how cost varies prior to the redemption grace period. So I would say that's the large bullet on the first page.
Right. That's the one I was referring to.
On reinspection, I think it in fact is covering those issues. Michael, did you have a comment?
Yes. Just with this whole discussion of price, you know, as a GoDaddy customer, I'm proud that GoDaddy tells me that if a name goes into auction, I am going to pay an $80 redemption fee. That's in the terms of service. It's on their website. That provides openness, transparency, and predictability. Now, if somehow registrars feel that under the auspices of antitrust, they need to deny engaging in discussions of what should be public information to their registrants, so be it. I don't buy it. And
okay,
you know,
but Michael, the point I made is I think we have already asked this question in a different form. In the bullet on question one, starting, is the cost to the registrant?
Fair.
And this is Tim. Mike, my concern was more about the last couple of questions in six, where it's talking about, you know, is there a variance, and then starts asking, you know, what does that depend on? And I don't know if that gets in how related that is to antitrust, but I know it's certainly related to, could be related to, you know, competitive decisions that are made or, you know, business model aspects that may not, a registrar may not want to reveal, and I just don't, you know, regardless of what our goal is or right or wrong or any of that thing, I just don't think you're going to get a lot of information on that with that question.
Okay.
I'm not sure what purpose.
Tim, I would suggest we delete the one currently numbered six, because I believe it is a replication of what we've talked about before.
This is Marika. Just a clarification. Do we delete everything or just keep the first sentence?
Everything under six. Does the registrar or affiliate?
Okay.
Because the auction process has already been covered since we said anything prior to the entering the RGP. We are now asking, the next question is, for registrars that have auction services, what percentage of registrants have exercised the right to reclaim it after the auction has started? Does anyone have a problem with that?
It's Mason again.
Mason?
I don't necessarily have a problem.
Mike Pelage, was your hand still up?
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Mike.
I'll take it down. My apologies.
Okay. Sorry, Mason.
I don't think registrars who operate these kinds of services are going to give you that information. I think they'll view it as proprietary.
That's fine.
Yeah. I mean, I don't necessarily object to the question itself. I seriously doubt you're going to get the answer.
You may have the same comment with the next one.
Yep.
No, I'm sorry. The next one, I don't think we were asking the actual registrars. I think that this would be gathered ourselves, and the intent was not to publicize this in any list of answers that might come out, but simply to use it in a global sense to understand what percentage of overall registrations have we covered. And the last question, and the last two should probably be inverted, is the registrar responding on behalf of a family of registrars or on behalf of themselves only?
Yeah, this is Ron again.
Yep.
And this comes back to the thing, we're not asking the registrars under this. This is our internal group, so there isn't any registrar responding. This is a collection of data from their public website.
Or retrieved by one-on-one discussion.
Oh, it does include one-on-one discussion? Okay.
To the extent that we cannot glean the information, ICANN will try to get it.
Okay.
Based on discussion.
Sure.
And maybe
responding
may be the wrong word, but do the questions, you know, correspond to a family or to an individual? I think we have come to closure. There's a couple of things we're going to reword from the list, or rather from the recording. There are one or two things that we said we may have further conversation on the list. At that point, we will send around in relatively short order the revised version of this. And next meeting, we may actually start beginning to talk about some substantive issues. The next meeting is... Why are you laughing?
I'm sorry. It's been a very long night for me, Eleanor.
All right. Our next call is scheduled for... Our next call is scheduled for next week at this time.
And this is Marika. If I can just add, for the next call, I hope to have a summary of the public comments that have been received. The public comment forum has been closed, but we did receive, I think, around 10 or 11 comments.
Excellent.
And another point that has been on the agenda for, I think, already two calls that we haven't been able to get to is the plans for the PDNR workshop or meeting in Seoul. You know, it would be nice if we can put something on the website of what this, you know, the meeting is going to be about or what will be interesting for the broader audience. So maybe people can think about that for next week.
Well, since we don't have a questionnaire to go over again, hopefully we can move it closer to the top of the agenda and make sure we cover it.
It's Jeff. Can I ask one quick question? Sorry,
you have 30 seconds left before the call expires. Yes, sir.
Okay. Can somebody send around, if we have it, the proposed date and time for the Seoul meeting? I don't know if that was made available.
I don't know when it is either, Marie.
Oh, okay.
You know? Last I heard it was Monday.
Yes, I think it's on Monday. If I'm not mistaken, 2:30 or 3:00. But I'll confirm and send it to the list.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I thank you all for your participation, for your good humor, and Cheryl, I wish you luck in whatever is happening in your life right now.
Thank you.
This meeting's better than coffee, isn't it, Cheryl?
For those who didn't hear the beginning part, she's sitting in a hospital emergency waiting room waiting for the results of some tests on her son, I believe. Thank you, Cheryl. Thank you all.
Bye. You were more excited than Bubble Breaker. What can I say?
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Alan.
Bye.
Is being recorded, and you may begin.
Ah, okay.
Thank you, and can we have a roll call?
Yes, I'll do that. Good morning, good afternoon to everyone. On today's call, we have Alan Greenberg, Tatiana Kramtsova, Cheryl Langdonor, Michaela Nalon, Ron Wickersham, James Bladell, Mike O'Connor, Jeffrey Eckhouse, Barry Cobb, Paul Diaz, Sergei Gorbunov, Ted Suzuki, Elaine Doolin, Mason Cole, Michael Young. From staff, we have Margie Milam, Marika Konings, myself, Gisela Gruber-White, and apologies, we have Karim Ajumani, Davina Meigs, William McKellicott, and Avery Doria. And if I could please just remind everyone to state their names when they speak for transcription purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Alan.
Thank you, Gisela. Okay. We are using the Adobe chat room. I will try to keep an eye on people's hands up. If you are on the call but not on the chat room, then try to get in at any given moment when there's a break in the conversation and say you'd be like to be on the speaker's list, and I'll try to handle things in order. If someone notices I'm ignoring hands up because I'm focusing on something else, please let me know. All right. The first part of the agenda is to try to finalize the registrar survey. Although we've made a lot of progress on it, it seems to be taking forever, and I'd like to the extent possible, get through it today so we can start working on doing more substantive work as we go ahead. A new version went out yesterday, I suspect, from Marika, and I would like to go over that quickly and see whether there's any outstanding issues that we have to address other than the particular ones that we deferred until a future time. However, we did start a discussion on email and with regarding a comment that Michael Young made regarding the RGP. And before we go forward, I'd like him to clarify what he meant, because as I read the email, I thought he said we want to make the RGP work as it was originally intended to, which implies the name has to be deleted because the RGP doesn't kick in until then. And before the recording started, he was trying to elaborate on that and say what he really meant. So,
sure.
I'd like
so,
to understand that.
Basically, Alan, what I'm saying here, and I've just popped back an email as well, the list to support this. My discussion of what the RGP was intended to do isn't what it was intended to do as a hardcore function, but was what it was intended to accomplish. It was intended to accomplish a couple of things. And the discussions back then were how do we get the attention of the registrant when a name's expired? How do we provide them additional layer of protection? And those were the couple of core intentions. And so RGP was created as an artifact, a functional artifact, to try and address those two issues. Now, what I think you're doing is jumping to the natural assumption that RGP is defined by how it works currently. And I don't see RGP as being defined as how it currently works. How it currently works probably is no longer effective to accomplish what RGP was supposed to do. Does that make sense?
Yeah, okay. So what I think you're saying is you want to revert back to the intent of the RGP, which was, number one, to make sure you do something which is, to the extent possible, going to get the attention of the registrant.
Right.
In the case of the RGP, by making sure it went black.
Right.
And number two, give them a reasonable period of time in which to do something. Now, with the RGP, that time was anywhere from 30 days if the registrar deleted the name immediately up until a maximum of 75 days, during which the registrant had time to reclaim. And I'm not saying we replicate that exactly, but that was the mechanism that the RGP provided.
Well, in combination with the auto-renew grace period, that's what effectively came out of it. But the RGP itself, like exclusive of the auto-renew, was only ever defined as a 30-day period.
Right, but it was 30 days after deletion, which could have taken place anywhere from 0 to 45 days after expiration.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I think I understand your email, and it was sufficiently different from some of the other things that were being said. I wanted to make sure that was clear before we went on with this conversation. Okay, if we can go back to the survey, we've made a number of both cosmetic and functional changes. And how would the group like to do this? Do you want to go over them one by one, or do you simply want me to take, assume people have read it and identified the things they don't like and take exceptions? Is there any strong feelings? My preference, I think, is to quickly read them or read a summary of each one and make sure that we have positive acknowledgement as we go ahead. Does that sound reasonable?
Silence is acceptance.
Silence is acceptance. Okay. Well, silence could also be everyone dropped off the call. Or I've dropped off the call and didn't know it yet. Okay. There was a whole slew of questions, each of which could be typically answered by a yes, no, or providing a fact or something that would not be a long narrative description on what happens if the registrant is silent at expiration time. First one, does the registrar allow the domain name to auto-renew in those registries that employ the policy? This is not something the registrant sees, but there has been an interest in knowing whether that's the case or not. And I don't presume there's any harm in asking. When and how are notices of expiration sent to the original, the registrant at expiration prior to expiration? If a reseller is involved, are the notices sent from the reseller or the registrar?
Alan, you have a hand up.
Ah, yes. Ron, thank you.
Yeah. Actually, my question comes to the methodology area above it, which is, as I understand, originally I thought these survey questions were going to be sent to the registrars. But am I now to understand that there's a group going to try to do it from the web pages?
Yes.
And then give a report back?
What we decided a couple of meetings ago was a modest number of people of registrars, if we pick them reasonably well, will cover a very large number of registrants.
Okay.
And we did not want to have too large a group because it's going to take too long to do and take too long to collate. So I think we ended up, Marika can correct me, with a number like 10 or 20 as the first pass, and then we could decide at that point whether we needed any more or not.
Okay, but these questionnaires won't be sent to the registrars
initially. They will not be
our own internal group.
Yeah, they will not simply be sent out because that would add a significant amount of time and the percentage that would respond would probably be small. We would attempt to gather as much data as we could from websites and then fill that out with personal discussions.
Got it.
I believe is what we were talking about. Marika, is that reasonably close to what you thought?
Yes, I think that's correct. The idea would be you need to try to find what information is publicly available and then to work hopefully with many of the registrars that are participating in this group to find that actual information that is missing from the public domain.
Yeah. I mean, from my point of view, I think one of the things we are going to get out of it, which is important to know, is that there is a wide variation in practices amongst registrars, that it's not a very monolithic set of processes that are followed, and I think that's an important issue that we have to wrestle with as we go ahead with this.
Right. Yeah, some of the questions, though, seem to dig deeper than what's publicly available and seem to be addressed to the registrar to reveal stuff that may not be on the public web page.
Well,
as we
go through them, if you can identify those, and we either need to justify why we're doing it and make sure it's reasonable, though we do not want to do things which are likely to discourage registrars from participating.
Agreed.
On the other hand, there may well be information that's important for us in trying to follow this process through. Okay, so the first one is what notices do you send before expiration? The second one is what notices are sent following expiration? And are they sent from a reseller, if a reseller was involved? The next question is, under what does the registrar make changes to Whois data? And we're talking about substantial changes, typically meaning the contact names and addresses, that is, who is the registrant of record at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So we know there are some things such as expiration date, which will change automatically when the domain is renewed, as it typically will be for an extra year. We are not looking at those changes. The next question is the cost to the registrant to recover the name, how does this relate to the cost that that they simply would have paid if they had done it before expiration? And if it varies, under what conditions does it vary? Now, one of the things that was inserted at the last meeting, or because of the last meeting, is one of the variables the cost of recovery for the registrar. And I cannot recall, maybe somebody else does, why we added this. There is a cost to the registrar, an out-of-pocket cost to the registrar, if it goes into the RGP. But prior to that, I'm not aware of out-of-pocket costs that are associated with that. Anyone who...
Alan, this is James.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was, I think, behind getting that inserted. And the reason being that while there may not be a direct dollar cost to a registry, there is a cost burden, so maybe that's a better phrase, cost burden to a registrar in recovering a name when it's in that front.
Okay, I can live with that if we insert that word. I just wanted to make sure it was inserted intentionally and not misinserted in the wrong place. Okay, next.
Could you just repeat which word you would like to see inserted?
Cost burden.
Okay.
And delete my whole square bracket comment. The next point was, at what point after expiration is the DNS changed so the domain name no longer resolves to the original website? Now, we're not asking at that point whether it goes black, resolves to a pay-per-click page or whatever, but it no longer resolves to the RAE site. Now, I worded that question, well, I have a question for you. If a registrar, and I'm not saying anyone does, but I've had discussions with registrars saying they could do this, if the registrar changes the domain name to point to their own site, which in turn passes control back to the website, is that caught by the wording I'm asking here? So the situation there would be, to a visitor to the website, it looks no different. But the registrar is, in fact, intercepting the traffic and counting it.
Hey, Alan, it's Jeff.
I'm
unsure. I don't know. Maybe I'm not sure of the question. So you're saying if I have my site up that, you know, about cats or whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
saying that, and I'm a registrant, and then I have it registered with whatever, ABC domains or whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
they're a registrar, that they would, but you're saying if the hosting is with that registrar and...
No.
Can you explain?
Yes, certainly. James, may I use GoDaddy as an example? Not claiming you do this. If I have a domain, cats.org, registered with GoDaddy, it expires. GoDaddy has the technical ability to point the domain name at a GoDaddy server, which then redirects it to my cats website. To a visitor, it looks like cats is still working if they're not carefully watching the headers.
Yeah, it's
but the traffic. But the traffic is going through GoDaddy.
So it's Jeff here. Just one thing is that that's a technical issue, because unless the hosting is with that person, is with that registrar, and if the hosting has not expired, because if not, the hosting is it's hosted on a separate site on it could be hosted, let's call it at Rackspace.
That's right.
Yeah, so that person it would have to go hand in hand because of you would need the IP addresses and then having to change the host records. I don't even know it's probably technically possible, but it would have to be, I don't even know if it's technically possible.
I wasn't asking if it's technically possible. I know it's technically possible. I was asking, do you believe that the wording of this is the DNS changed so that the original, so the domain name no longer resolves to the RAE's website? In other words, if cats.org used to point to 1.1.1.1 and now points somewhere else, I believe the answer is, this question is, yes, we have changed it. Even if it still looks to the user as if the website is unchanged. I just want agreement that that's what we're talking about. So I'm saying really, if the DNS has changed, then the answer to this is yes, we changed it.
Yeah, I'd just like to say, I see what you're driving at with the question, but there's still this distinction between the DNS is unclear because you have the DNS records in the root and where they point to for that domain. And then the other thing that you've brought up is the possibility that a hosting company can change the zone records. But these are two completely different things that affect recovery differently. So that technical distinction between the DNS to me implies the root zones and a zone change at a registrar.
Okay, I'm going to suggest that we ignore the whole example I gave. The intent of this question is if you do a DNS query, the A record comes back was the day before expiration.
Okay, I understand what your intention is now.
Okay, and I think I just want to make sure the wording is correct for that.
Alan, it's Mason. You got a couple of hands up, and then I'd like to be cued, please.
Problem when I look at the paper. Kelly,
mm-hmm.
The only hand I see up right now.
Yeah, I'm completely confused by your question.
Then forget the whole question. Let's erase the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, because I'm trying to understand what the intention is of your question. Is that you're talking about two things that I can't see as being compatible. If you change the name servers of the domain, the likelihood of it pointing to the original website is slim to none, as far as I'm concerned. So I don't really understand. What you're talking about.
As I said, if you'll forgive me, I can explain offline or when we meet. But it's not really important right now. I just wanted to make sure the intent of this bullet was that if the A record changes, provides a different answer than it did before expiration, then the answer is yes, we changed it.
So in simple terms, you're saying it's before expiry, it's pointing to whatever the hell it's pointing to, and post-expiry, it's pointing somewhere else.
If it's pointing somewhere else, then I'm asking at what point was... We're asking at what point was this changed?
Okay.
The answer might be never. We didn't change it. We don't change it. Okay?
Okay.
The follow-on question is at this point...
Sorry, Alan. It's
yes.
Mason. Can I ask a question on that previous question?
Yes, certainly. Sorry.
So what would the answer to that question give you in terms of information about helping a registrant get a name that maybe he unintentionally let go?
One of the scenarios that has been discussed is a registrar that does not change DNS during the post-expiration process.
Mm-hmm.
That is, there is no visual clue
user
that anything has happened. So that goes back to what Michael Young was saying before. Of the 30-day period during RJP makes the website go black.
I understand. Okay. All right. All right.
Which is something hard to ignore if you're awake at all.
All right. I'm with you.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Yeah. In that regard, I think we have to make a distinction between whether an A record, which appears in a zone, or whether the root things pointing to the name server changes. I think that technical issue is at the heart of what you're saying. The registrar doesn't control acting as a registrar. They don't act as someone who controls the A record. It may be a registrar acting as a hosting company, but
the gist of what I was saying was trying to not have to have different questions based on whether the registrar hosts the DNS that is in use or not.
Right, but if they're not
going to change... It doesn't matter who's the authority for that domain name.
Mm-hmm.
The question is what comes back.
I get what your goal is, but I think we really need to ask whether or not the root servers are changed to point to a different name server or not, because that's the real clue that's been traditionally used.
But that does not catch the case where the DNS that the registrant is using is hosted by the registrar, who can then change the A record without changing the root zone.
Right, if they choose not to change the root zone. So the important thing is, did they change the root zone or not? So, yeah. Oh, okay.
If you don't change the root, I mean, sorry. I think part of the problem...
Who's speaking? Is Michele?
Sorry, it's Michele here.
Okay.
I think part of the problem is the way the question is worded.
Well, that's why I was trying to make sure it's worded reasonably.
Well, no, I think if you just made it a little bit more explicit as into... as an explain, i.e., it no longer resolves to the original web page. Well, actually says that, though. So I don't know why it's causing so much confusion. Is it the term DNS that is causing all this problem with the root zone query?
Yeah, that's the problem. This is Ron Wickersham again. Yeah, that's the problem to me, that as far as looking down the road, formulating a policy suggestion, that it makes a difference whether the root zones were ever changed or not. So collecting information to that regard makes it clearer what we can make a policy recommendation.
Perhaps, maybe I'm missing something. If my website is pointing to 1.1.1.1, you change the root zone to point to a different
Yes, when it's deleted from the root zone, then there's no name server associated with that domain, and it goes dark.
But if you now point it to your name server as the authority and put an A record in your...
But I have no way, if it's been hosted somewhere else, I have no way other than if I'm busy spending time looking at who's hosting my customer's domains, I have no way of recreating that zone. They may have additional things that's necessary for their web page. It may not be just an A record for www. It may be another one for images. Or forum. Or wiki. And I have no way of knowing if all of those are recreated or not in this distant zone to make.
The gist of why this question was added, if we go back to the start of this, is asking, does someone who is coming in and trying to use the website, whether it's the registrant or someone else, see a difference?
Mm-hmm.
So So what the root zone says and who is the authority on this domain doesn't really matter.
For the purpose of the question. Okay. As long as we cover that somewhere else, if changes are made in the root zone, I think we need to be aware of whether changes are made in the root zone or not.
Okay. I have no problem asking that as a separate question. But
okay.
One can make
yeah,
changes in the root zone and still end up with the same end result from a user's perspective.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And at that point, to some extent, it can be completely moot. I mean, if you revamp all of your domain servers, you may make a change in the root zone, but it doesn't change the end result.
Right, but if it's deleted in the root zone, then it goes dead.
And that's certainly a change. All right, if anyone is not happy with the wording there, then let's propose something else on the list.
Okay.
Let's not
yeah.
try to wordsmith it right now. The next question says, at this point, which says something has changed, where does it point? And we've gone through a number of words. I think that what is there right now is what was proposed during the last meeting.
Alan, this is James.
Hey.
Yes, please, James. Go ahead.
Yes, and maybe my memory is faulty, but I thought we were going to not necessarily get into the construction of a new page, just essentially say it was going to post it something else. I think that was
I think what we said last time is we didn't want to offer suggestions.
Right.
But we wanted to ask a more open-ended question, and the pay-per-click was an example.
I think I recall Jeff and I were discussing some alternative language to not necessarily get into what was or was not on the new page, just what, you know, where did it go, and let them describe it, as you're saying, not offer any...
I did have one specific comment, that the wording that Marika captured was, does it point to the original page or a different page? And I think since this question is prefixed saying... we're only talking about when it's pointing somewhere else, we don't need the original page or a different page there on the first line.
Since we've already established that it's pointing somewhere else.
That's right. So I think we're saying, does it point, or where I think the wording then would have to be, instead of please specify, where does it point? Example, a paperclip page. Is that acceptable to all?
Yes.
Okay. The next question goes back to the issue of does the registrant or someone else looking at the page understand what's happening and saying does the new page explicitly say that the registration has expired and how it should be reclaimed? I think that's a very important issue from the point of view of the registrant. And someone else going to the page who may want to alert the registrant.
Yeah, good question. So, hi for that.
Okay, then we go into go away from the web, remembering that domain names can be used for a whole multitude of things, but the primary ones that we can ask targeted questions are on are the web, which we've just done, and email. And the next set of questions have to do with what happens to the email, essentially. One can imagine a number of different scenarios that it can get redirected somewhere else. It can continue going to the original registrant through use of an MX record, even if the website is redirected. It can go into a black hole. It can bounce. Sorry, James.
Sorry, Mason, did you want to go or?
Nope, I was pointing to your hand up.
Okay. Oh, okay. Thanks. The wording of this particular question, and I think we've touched on this issue before, is because, you know, just the nature of email, a registrar cannot ensure delivery. So I think, you know, we should probably necessarily, you know, does the name stop being delivered? I think that we can say at what point, you know, things are sent and what actions a registrar may or may not do to, you know, to increase the likelihood of delivery.
Just for the record, the first question, the one starting at what point has been is I'm proposing or we are proposing is being replaced by the next two bullets.
The entire first question will be stricken and replaced by the next two bullets?
If the RAE and if the RAE. There's a parenthetical in the middle which says that.
Okay.
I think the questions still have the problem you're talking about, but nevertheless.
Okay. Go ahead. I'll let. I saw someone else with their hand up, so I'll drop out of the queue.
Well, everyone is down now. Paul had his hand up, but it's gone.
I guess I'll just weigh in because I was fine with what James was saying. This is Paul.
Yeah.
What James was saying, and then I got a little confused by what you just added, Alan. If you can redirect, you're suggesting what?
Okay. The bullet that is at the top of a page, at least top of my page, which says.
Right.
At the point, at what point does email is struck, and in its place, there are two new bullets, both of which start with the RAE. If the RAE.
Okay, then I do have a question, if I may. I think we need to clarify here if the registrar is not hosting the DNS. I don't know how we would determine that, other than the fact that we'll get a bounce if we send an email. But
okay, just for the record, DNA should be DNS, of course.
Can we clarify the question a little bit?
Well, the question came up last time of how can an MX record be left in place if the website points somewhere differently. And after a little bit of to and fro, we realized that there are two different scenarios. One is where the DNS managed by perhaps the reseller or web hoster is being used. And the other case is when the DNS is not associated with the registrar, in which case you must move all or nothing. Does that make any more sense?
No.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't think so. And I think we'll need to insert that in your new bullet point beginning, if the REs, et cetera. And we're going to have to make that clearer because as a registrar that's looking to try and respond to this, we're going to be left scratching our heads saying, if we don't have control over the DNS, we can't answer it. Maybe that's a response you're looking
well,
for.
Well, the first bullet, the first new one says, if the RAE has been using the registrar's or reseller's own DNS, if they haven't, then they don't answer that question at all.
Sorry, that's a formatting. Since it starts further up, I thought it was all from the previous. Okay. I see that now you say there are two questions that come out of it instead of one.
Sorry, that was just a formatting. I'm trying to show the logic of how we got to the revisions. Kelly?
Yeah, I'm just reading all this stuff here about the email, and my head's going to explode. I mean, okay, you're going to have to get rid of any reference to the term deliver with anything involving email. Sending is one thing, as already been stated, there's no way for anybody to know if it's been delivered or not. Asking any registrar to keep track of bounces and everything else is completely unreasonable.
No, that certainly wasn't the intent. The intent was if I send email to X at the domain that is now in question, the one that has expired, one of several things can happen. It can still be targeted at the original place. Now, whether it works or not you know, depends on the idiosyncrasies of the Internet. That wasn't what the issue was. The issue was, is there still an A or an MX record which says, try to deliver it to the original place? In the absence of that happening, is it going somewhere where the answer will be, sorry, that user doesn't exist here anymore? Or will it just go into a black hole?
But I don't understand what the answer to that question is.
Well, it has exactly the same use as the questions related to the website. If you have a domain name which is not being used for a website, but is used being purely used for email, as an example, what happens? What message do you get back that it has expired?
Okay, but is this in reference to a third party trying to send email to the domain name, or is this in reference to the registrar sending email to the domain name?
No, this is the first bullet is in reference to a third party.
Okay.
Or are you sending email to yourself? But the question is, if mail is directed at an email address using the domain name that has expired, what happens based on the changes, if any, that the registrar has made?
We're not talking about
the reliability of the Internet. We're talking about what is the intent of the changes. I welcome better wording.
Yeah, I think you just said it.
Did anyone capture it?
It's in the transcript. Or in the...
That's what the transcript for, Alan.
God bless MP3.
Okay, if we go back to the transcript and try to capture that, is everyone happy?
Yeah. May I ask if, could we possibly make one little change, which is this email directed says a whole bunch of intermediate steps. I think what you really mean to say is email address to the domain name.
Oh,
and that would, because directed implies
I consider that a friendly amendment.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyone else want to have a go at this before we go on to the next one?
Yeah, this is Tim.
Yeah.
Alan.
Oh, welcome,
Tim. I joined late. You might even want to use that term third party so that it's clear that this question is not about email that the registrar is sending, but email that others are sending. Just a note, when we get back, when we actually do this survey and we get back responses, we
may have to tweak the questions.
Yeah, because I think we might find there's other things that aren't quite as clear as we think they could be. And or we may have to look at other sources, too, for some of the information. I have a feeling that there's probably a good number of registrars who may not even know the answer to that question, simply because they don't necessarily process their own email,
right.
Whether it's hosted elsewhere or not. You know, in other words, they advertise being the hoster and et cetera, but actually using third-party tools or services to provide it.
Sure. All right, Marika, I know we were having this conversation when the wording was talked about was about 38 minutes into the call. One of us should be able to find the exact wording at that point.
Yeah, I just have a question.
Sorry, Marika?
Yeah, no, I just wanted to know where Tim wanted to use the third-party reference.
Mail sent.
Yeah, I would say third party email addressed to the domain or something like that.
Okay.
Or mail sent by a third party.
Right. Yeah, this is Ron Wickersham again. And these questions, while we keep referring in the conversation to saying they're addressed to a registrar, I believe at this time these questions are addressed to our internal panel, who tries to gather this information from the website. And this is a tough one to gather from a website.
This one is not likely to be gathered from the website.
Okay.
Marika has a whole room full of people back there that will be gleefully asking these questions for us.
I wish.
Gleeful is a term of art I hadn't heard in this context.
I don't know. Some of us seem pretty gleeful at the moment, but it may be just exhaustion. All right. If we can go on, the next one is, if the RAE's contact email uses the domain name in question, does the registrar factor this in sending out post-expiration reminders? This is something that was brought up in the last call of, if I have a.org registered and my contact information is a.org, does anyone notice that, or do we still gleefully try to send the mail out, which we know won't get there? That doesn't, of course, address what should be done in such a case, but that's not at the level of information gathering. Okay. The next question seems to be a follow-on to the previous one, and I'm not sure if they need to be merged into the same question. The first question, as we had it now, said at what point is mail addressed at a specific domain name I don't remember what I said. I think the wording that we came up to that we're going to go back to the transcript with now includes the question of what happens to the mail.
I think you said directed to or something like that.
Yeah. But the question of does it bounce or discarded or redirected to another recipient factors in. If you give Marika and I the latitude, we'll either do this in two questions or one question, whichever we can phrase best.
Alan, it's Mason.
Yeah.
I think the answer to some of this is going to be we have no idea. I mean, if it gets redirected to, like, if it's to a company or something like that, and a person who's responsible for the domain name and who is record leaves the employee of the company, but his or her email is forwarded to someone else in the company, we may not know that.
No, the question isn't the question is not whether it goes to user X or user Y at the domain name. The question is, if you are now intercepting the traffic to go to, for instance, a pay-per-click page, what happens to the email that was going to that same domain name? That's the substance of the question.
Okay.
I mean, there are a number of issues. Number one, it's a matter of what kind of awareness is there that the email is no longer working. If it is no longer working, it could still be working. And there's a privacy issue of what are you doing with this email that was directed at someone else that you now have been able to take over. One presumes you're not sitting there at your desk reading it with glee, but that's the substance of the question.
All right.
The next question had to do with spam filters and what's the likelihood that someone will get a message. And the question was, are the reminders sent to the same address that the registrar normally uses for communication? Don't remember who added that. It may have been Mike Pelage. Or maybe somebody else.
This is Marika. I recall that someone put forward a question with in mind that I think in certain cases an email address might be filtered through the spam filter if it's not the usual address. And
yeah.
Question
no, it was spam filter related.
This is Mikey. You might want to add that to the question just to clarify the spam business.
Add a clarification that if a different address is used, it might be caught by a spam filter or something like that, just to explain why we're asking the question.
Yeah.
I think that's reasonable.
Yeah, this is Ron. Yeah, I was the one who raised that before because of an incident where post-expiration, the
the originating email address changed and so the registrant didn't understand that these were from his registrar. They seemed to be phishing attacks.
Well, yes, indeed. I've personally seen ones where they come from a generic name, you know, domain name services or something like that, which
right.
sounds like someone phishing, but it, mm-hmm. in that particular case, it happens to be a legitimate
mm-hmm.
domain name owned by the registrar.
But all previous communications from the registrar have not had that appearance.
That, you know. Yeah, and the other issue, of course, is if the original contact was made by a reseller and the reminders are now coming from the registrar, that may be
mm-hmm.
a name no one has ever seen before also.
Agreed.
All right.
This is Mikey. I don't think any of that last paragraph of conversation is captured by the question the way it's worded now. I think it's really important, but it needs to be stuck in there somehow.
So you're talking about the issue that if it comes from either an unfamiliar source or a suspect-looking source, it may be either just ignored or treated as spam, something capturing that intent.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Noted. I say that blithely, and I'm hoping Marika is noting.
Good old MP3.
At what point is the expired domain name made available to others than the RE, sale, auction, whatever? Any problems with that?
Yeah, I like it.
Okay, if the reseller is involved in the original transaction, how does the RAE determine whether they are dealing with a reseller or a registrar? If the RAE is dealing with a registrar, how can the RAE identify the affiliated registrar? And to recover the domain name, can the RAE work with the registrar directly or must work with the reseller? Now, some of these, the early questions are to some extent addressed by the new RAA, in that there is a requirement to make available, not always clearly, but to make available who the registrar is, if it's a reseller. But
Alan, this is James.
Yes.
Yeah, I just wanted
James.
To... Hello?
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to point out that I was behind this kind of clumsy compound question last week for the folks that missed the last call, really attempting to boil down, I think, a number of questions and topics related to how resellers fit into this transaction, if indeed they do at all. So I thought perhaps structuring it in this series of dependent conditionals might be the most straightforward way to do that.
Okay, thank you.
But I'm open to edits.
I think they're relatively clear and useful. I've always personally been interested in how many times does a registrant try to transfer a domain from one reseller of Registrar X to another reseller of Registrar X. I'd be curious in seeing the statistics of that. But nevertheless. Okay, next. What options are available for contacting reseller or registrar post-expiration? The question was asked because it has been noted that, particularly in the case of some resellers, but possibly registrars also, they don't even provide a telephone number, and they only provide email or a web form. And if you're trying to do something urgently, that's not necessarily the way to get quick action. And perhaps lastly, under what conditions is the domain name actually deleted and enters the RGP? Are we happy now that these are, once we do the edits that we're talking about today, that these are reasonably complete and we can go ahead with it? We may, of course, learn something during the process of doing the original survey that requires us to or makes us want to change something. But are we moderately comfortable that this is a good start?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Cheryl, yes.
Thank you. The second question is essentially the same scenario, but what happens if the registrant explicitly says they are not interested in renewing? And the answer could be we do exactly the same things, or maybe there is something that's done differently.
Alan, a question. It's Mason.
Yes, go ahead.
When you say explicit instructions of an intention not to renew, what is that? What's an example of that in your mind?
You send out a reminder to someone, and they come back, return it, and say, I don't want this domain name anymore. I have no intention of renewing.
Okay. So the question is, if we get that, do we still follow any of the procedures that you outline under number one?
Any of the procedures that you outlined, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can we get the attention of the operator to try to get the deadline away? Is anyone here, or is it just me?
No, I can hear you.
Okay, fine. Thank you. I thought for a moment it was just me. Okay.
A question for you, Alan?
Yes.
This is Paul. This particular question, I guess, I'm just help me think through the logic here for the questions before the working group, the charter questions. I'm talking about, you know, means to recover a name plus expiration. This question is asking, somebody says, I don't want the name anymore, and yet you're still asking what happens? I'm missing a step in the logic here. Why are we asking this question?
The reason is a number of registrars have said, if someone tells us that they really want to delete a name, we don't believe them. We know sometimes they're going to be coming back shortly thereafter and say, oops, I made a mistake, I really want it again.
Alan, this is James.
Yes, James.
And that was me, and I don't think that that's precisely what I was trying to say. It was
okay.
Close. I was trying to say something like a certain percentage will want to come back.
Okay.
And have that reverse. And so to guard against that percentage, we would, if a registrant explicitly asks to cancel a name, we do hold on to it for a brief period of time, so long as we don't cross over any grace period boundaries, to ensure that we have that is a reversible decision.
I was being flippant, inappropriate for the chair, but I was trying to say what you just said.
Okay.
This is Mikey. I've got a question.
Yes, go ahead.
What about fraud? What about a person who intercepts the email and fraudulently says no?
That perhaps is a good reason for the registrar also to not take immediate action. But we're just asking what registrars do at this point.
And again, Alan, this is Mike Pelage. As someone who originally asked the question, we were trying. Part of this question also was to look at the general practices of registrars where they auto-renew all the names from their account. So this is kind of trying to get a spectrum of how they treat different domains, or if they even, in fact, do treat them differently. As we heard from some of the registrars in some previous calls, notwithstanding that some registries have different billing practices regarding auto-renew, most registrars appear to follow the same practice regarding the impact on the end user, whether they do or do not get charged the renewal fee at the time of expiration.
Okay. Is there any strong objection to keeping this question here? We do need to move on. We have only a half hour more, and I really want to finish this whole questionnaire. If not, we'll move on. But Michele had his hand up still or not?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a bit concerned about some of these questions about what registrars do or don't do with domains. That's largely irrelevant. I mean, the question is whether a registrant whether a registrant is given the opportunity to recover the domain name. What registrars are doing or not doing with domains is irrelevant.
Are you talking about a specific question at this point?
Yeah. This entire side conversation about people being interested in what registrars do with domains, I feel, is completely off topic.
Okay.
The question that's being asked, and this working group is meant to answer, is whether or not a registrant has ample opportunity to recover their domain, to renew their domain, or whatever. What business practices registrars may or may not use and why they do so is irrelevant.
Okay, but I'm not sure in respect to which of the questions on this questionnaire you're talking about.
Well, it's some of the questions that Mr. Pelage has brought up in both on the list and just now as well. I mean, it just seems to me that this question's being asked, and the reason that they're being asked does not actually address what this working group's scope is meant to be. And I think that it's by asking too many questions about sideline topics, you're not actually going to help anybody, because you're not going to get honest answers, and I should remain firmly on the ball. In other words, does the registrant have the opportunity to renew the domain? Are they given ample notification? Whether registrars are being billed, not billed, taking hits or not taking hits is irrelevant. It's got nothing to do with this.
This is Mike Pelage. So who was you speaking?
McKaylee.
McKaylee. Hi, McKaylee. As far as the relevance, I do think it is relevant regarding some of the operational practices, because as was documented by Christina Rosette from the IPC, when registrars, as part of the expiration practice, begin to make changes to who is information, that does have an impact on their ability to potentially timely recover a domain name. So the reason I had that question regarding what happens if someone chooses to expire a name, are they making changes to the who is? So I do think that there is some relevance. So I do take issue to your claim.
It's totally
irrelevant.
I'm going to intercede in this debate. We have two hands up, James, and then Jeff.
Yeah, just real quickly, Mike. Christina, for point of clarification, Christina Rosette's scenario described a different situation. It was not an expired name. It was a deleted name that a registrant was attempting to avoid legal action, so they deleted the name.
To have the debate about the questions we're looking at and not the side comments that people are making. Jeff, did you have something specific?
Oh, yeah. I'll let that go. I just wanted to know if somebody could send that email to the list so that we could read it to ourselves, and then I'll just leave it at that, because I agree with you. I want to move on.
This is the Christina email.
Yes.
It was sent to the list, but
I must have missed it. I'll look through my again.
It wasn't sent to the list, but it's in the public comments forum.
Okay.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. There's a parenthetical after two which relates to that question, and it is a question for this group. Do we want to ask the question of if someone terminates an agreement prior to expiration, does the registrar treat it as a delete or not? Which, if they do, do they treat it as an expiration, or do they not treat it as an expiration? Because we're asking about registrar practice on whether it falls into our working group scope or not. Did I confuse everyone with the question?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm afraid you did.
Yes.
Let me try again. In the scenario of a registrant requesting that a name be canceled, deleted, regardless of the exact terminology, the question is, what process does a registrar follow at that point? And the specific question is, do you treat this as an expiration happening early, or do you treat it as some other process?
I'm sorry, Alan Mason, are you on question five now?
No, I'm on the square brackets are on question two.
Oh. Sorry.
Christina's question that she posted to the comment list talked about
a registrant who had requested the name be canceled early. There was a debate on this within this working group as to whether that is deemed to be an expiration and therefore falls within our scope, or is an early cancellation and it has nothing to do with expiration whatsoever.
Hmm.
And there seemed to be some division of opinion on whether an early cancellation is by definition an early expiration and expiration rules apply, or if it is treated some other way. And I'm suggesting that we ask the question of registrars when someone cancels a name in the middle of the process, do you consider this an early expiration or not?
Alan, it's Mason. I just have a question about that, if I may. So when you say an early, you're talking about before the original expiration date of the name?
6 months into the year.
Yeah. So okay. Yeah, so if somebody calls you and says, I don't want that name anymore, cancel it. That's what you're talking about.
Now, whether that means I don't want to own it anymore or it means I expect you to delete it so that it never existed in the world, everyone has different opinions on that. The only question that I am suggesting we ask is ask the registrar, do they consider this an expiration, which therefore does fall under our domain or not? We're not saying they're right or wrong, just asking the question.
This is Mikey. I think you done a pretty good job of pre-wording the question again in your comments. This would be another one for the NCC.
I've got to stop doing that. Okay, we are an hour and 2 minutes into the call. Is everyone okay with putting that question in? Hearing no no's, we go on.
Alan, this is Tim.
Yes.
So, I'm not so sure. I mean, doesn't that imply sort of an expansion of the of what this group was chartered to cover, which is basically post-expiration? So, if someone, I guess I'm not convinced completely that a request to cancel it prior to expiration is necessarily the same issue that we're dealing with here.
Well,
I get us off into another hole.
Okay, I think I heard Cheryl.
Yeah, thank you. I was just going to respond to Tim. That I thought was the purpose of asking, should we ask the question, to establish is it or is it not considered by anyone in the registry world, the registrar world, that it would be in any way, shape or form considered an expiration. If it is, then it is in our purview. If it isn't, well, no, it's not.
I have a question. It's Mason.
Yeah, my assumption is we're going to get some answers one way and some the other, and we're going to have to discuss it again. On the other hand, if no registrar in the world says they consider it an expiration, then I think we have to take that at its face value. We can debate whether we want to need to expand the scope of it if we deem it not to be an expiration, but we want to talk about it anyway. But I was just trying to ascertain, is there who thinks of this as an expiration and who does not?
I have a question, Alan.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I have two comments. One is, it seems like, I'm not an attorney, but it seems like that could be opened up for some manner of legal interpretation. My suspicion is that if you get a reply to this from registrars that you query, the reply might be, we get that so seldom that the question's irrelevant, or B, it depends on how you define expiration. I think registrars generally consider expiration to be on the anniversary of the beginning, a given anniversary of the beginning of that registration.
In which case, their answer is no, we don't treat it like an expiration.
But I guess this is Tim Allen. I guess my concern is whether this is open to, registrars defining what this is or not. I mean, either we're talking about a post-expiry in this group or we're not. If we're going to expand beyond that, then I think it should go back to the council for some interpretation or decision as to whether, the charter should include it or not.
Okay, so you believe we should not. James had a comment.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's similar to what Tim was saying, but maybe not. I mean, it's something of the effect of if 994 registrars say they do it one way and two say they do it the other way, what are we going to do with this information Are we going to try to bring everybody in line one way or the other, or if we prescribe any sort of practices or policies based on this process, then are the registrars still able to opt out by just not treating it as an expiration? I'm just trying to figure out where we're going.
I think if nothing else, we'll have some information to feed back to the person who made this particular comment and to the other people who have gone on that bandwagon that have said an early cancellation is an expiration.
Okay, I have two quick comments.
I guess I don't see the harm in asking the question.
Okay, but I just have two quick comments on that, and one is that whether we ask it here or not, I don't really have strong feelings, but you know, this possibly might be more appropriately directed at some of the folks who are looking at how folks would avoid UDRP or other types of actions. And, you know, that might be a better venue to raise this issue.
All right. I don't have any strong feelings about it. May I suggest people who feel strongly one way or another make comments to the list, and we'll try to come to closure on this in the next day or so.
Good idea.
Yeah, Alan, this is Tim.
Yes, Tim.
I probably won't comment on it on the list. I'll just make my comment now, and that again, I'll just reiterate that I think it's an expansion of scope, and that question appropriately belongs with the council and not on the list.
This is Mike Palage, and I guess if I could respond to that, Tim, maybe this questionnaire will find some other issues that may actually require an expansion of the original charter. So perhaps let's ask the questions, let's look at the issues, and then if there is a potential expanse of the charter, we should go back to the council and ask for it. But precluding questions from being answered at this time, I don't think is constructive.
Further discussion on the list.
Oh, I just predict the answer you're going to get, but, you know, that's, I guess, your choice.
Okay, we have 15 minutes left. Next question is, are the terms of the treatment of a domain name registration at the time of expiration contained in the registration agreement or in another document? Please specify if you have not already done so in question one or two. Essentially, where is a domain registrant supposed to find out this information? If the registrar makes substantial changes to who is at the time of expiration, is the practice dependent on the TLD? I would actually change that to the time at or after expiration.
Hey, Alan, it's Jeff. Can I ask a question here?
Yes, please.
Just on the one you just said, maybe you're saying if the registrar makes substantial changes to the who is that at the time of expiration, is that practice dependent upon the TLD? Are you saying, like, just to be simple, like com versus net? Because then you've given an example, auto renew versus non-auto renew. So I'm not sure of the question. Hopefully you can clarify this.
The question is what you do dependent on whether the registry charges you for that domain at expiration date or not?
Oh, I see. Okay. Can you just add that in just so it's crystal clear? Because I have a feeling, I just knowing other the registrars, people will be confused by that question.
We will try to clarify.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. And I would like to change it to at or after expiration. If they do it 3 days later, we're still asking the question, I think.
Well, what happens if a registrar decides to – what happens with a registrar who may want to change it, you know, 1 hour before expiration, even though the term of the registrant is up? The reason I like that at expiration was you kind of had a – the question was originally throwing a substantial net.
If you like it the way it is, it was asked at your request. I'm not sure we need the information, but it's not going to hurt us. If you're happy with the way it is, we'll leave it be.
Thanks.
Next question is still there, is does the registrar or affiliate provide the registrant prior to expiration the right to remove the name from auction sale processes? No comments, no hands.
McKay, one question.
Yes.
Filius meaning what exactly?
I think it is loosely meant as a subsidiary or parent or sister company.
It might be a good idea to explain that, because within this market, a lot of companies would have affiliates as in affiliate marketing, which would confuse things even further.
Ah, good point. I'll ask Michael offline, who came up with the question originally, if you can come up with a better word that will satisfy Michele and your own legal definition of this. James?
You know what? I'm going to lower my hand because I just answered my own question by reading it a little more carefully. I was wondering why we weren't using RAE, but it looks like we changed it to be registrant prior to expiration. So there is only one, and RAE is irrelevant, so I'm lowering my hand.
Ah, yes, okay. There may actually be a better term than registrant. I think the RAA uses some other expression. So there may be a question, but I think we all understand at this point. Does the registrar or affiliate we're using, we need to define the affiliate similarly here, provide the registrant the ability to renew, re-register a domain name once it has entered the auction process or after completion of the auction process? If so, are the costs the same as during the auto-renew, if the costs not, so on and so forth? Essentially, we're asking, is there a drop-dead point at which an auction begins, or is there still opportunities to reclaim, and if so, what are the general financial terms? No hands, no questions.
This is Mikey. You know, every time you do that little description that summarizes the question, I always like it better than the question itself. Just a
but I said, but I ended that, I took to the last three lines and said, and so forth.
Yeah, I know. I like that.
Alan, it's Mason.
You, Mikey, why don't you volunteer to transcribe this call for us?
Oh, it's the beauty of MP3.
Yes, Mason.
So just a word of caution, and I know this issue has been raised before, and there are differing opinions on it, but I don't think you can anticipate a lot of discussion from registrars on any kind of issue of pricing. So if you ask the question, I think you just need to be prepared for a polite decline on that question.
I would say that if registrars all politely decline to give us the parameters, not the actual absolute pricing, then that is producing, then if they won't tell us, they also won't tell the registrant, which is not providing a rather predictable and clear environment for that registrant past the point when the auction begins.
Well, I appreciate that point of view. I just want to say that I know registrars are extremely gun-shy to talk about their business practices in the presence of other competitors, whether it relates to pricing or not. And specifically when it does relate to pricing, I think you're especially going to get people who are just disinclined to say anything to stay completely on the safe side.
Any other comments? Do we have general agreement from all the registrars that we shouldn't be asking what happens as soon as the name enters an auction process, which, as I understand it, can start pretty soon after expiration in some cases?
Now, this is Tim Allen.
Yep.
I mean, asking what happens is one thing, you know, getting into details about, you know, renewal costs, and then it even goes further into, are the costs the same for all names? If not, what does it depend on, time of renewal, estimated value, et cetera, et cetera. I think that's where you're going to start running into probably not getting a whole lot of information.
But indeed, that's also the area that we have had large numbers of complaints on. That is, someone who wants to reclaim a name which has particular value based on whether it's semantic analysis of the name, pay-per-clicks, or how the auction is proceeding, may have to pay an arm and a leg compared to me renewing my no-name domain. They'll charge me $9. And that comes down to issues of predictability.
So Jeff has his hand up, but it's Mason again. I'd like to go after Jeff.
Okay, Jeff.
You can go, Mason. Go ahead. I'll go after you. Go ahead.
So I don't want to get too far into an answer here, but as a company that provides registration services and auction services and aftermarket services, I guess I question where the large number of complaints come from, where they go, and how we quantify them. Because we operate one of these services, and the scale of complaint against what I think is being alleged just doesn't exist. Now, it may be that I don't have the information that you do, but if you do have it, I'd like to see it, because it just simply does not exist operationally in our experience.
Jeff?
I was just going to go back to, sorry about that question, and just agree with Tim's response that I think that the earlier questions about having the ability to get it back, does it go into auction? In other words, it does answer the questions that we're looking for, well, I thought we were looking for in the working group, and this question goes, I don't know if it's getting to the answers that we're looking for, and I think I'll just have some problems with the responses on this. And what I'm trying to do is, you know, for somebody who has to deal with the registrars a lot as part of the XCOM, I know the back and forth that goes on and the responses we'll get. And I'm just trying to help on this group to get clarification so that people will respond. And I think I'll agree with the others, by putting that in, you'll probably have very limited response on this. And I won't say hostility, but I just think it'll have no response on it, and I want to try and get some responses to the survey so we can move on and, you know, and try and come to some sort of resolution to this.
On reconsideration, I believe we have already asked for the salient information about this in the bullet, the earlier bullet on question one, about how cost varies prior to the redemption grace period. So I would say that's the large bullet on the first page.
Right. That's the one I was referring to.
On reinspection, I think it in fact is covering those issues. Michael, did you have a comment?
Yes. Just with this whole discussion of price, you know, as a GoDaddy customer, I'm proud that GoDaddy tells me that if a name goes into auction, I am going to pay an $80 redemption fee. That's in the terms of service. It's on their website. That provides openness, transparency, and predictability. Now, if somehow registrars feel that under the auspices of antitrust they need to deny engaging in discussions of what should be public information to their registrants, so be it. I don't buy it. And
okay,
you know,
Michael, the point I made is I think we have already asked this question in a different form. In the bullet on question one, starting, is the cost to the registrant.
Fair.
And this is Tim. My concern was more about the last couple of questions in six, where it's talking about, you know, is there a variance, and then starts asking, you know, what does that depend on? And I don't know if that gets in how related that is to antitrust, but I know it's certainly related to, could be related to, you know, competitive decisions that are made or, you know, business model aspects that a registrar may not want to reveal, and I just don't, you know, regardless of what our goal is or right or wrong or any of that thing, I just don't think you're going to get a lot of information on that with that question.
Okay.
I'm not sure what purpose.
Tim, I would suggest we delete the one currently numbered six, because I believe it is a replication of what we've talked about before.
This is Marika, just a clarification. Do we delete everything or just keep the first sentence?
Everything under six. Does the registrar or affiliate?
Okay.
Because the auction process has already been covered since we said anything prior to the entering the RGP. We are now asking, the next question is, for registrars that have auction services, what percentage of registrants have exercised the right to reclaim it after the auction has started? Does anyone have a problem with that?
It's Mason again. I don't necessarily have a problem.
Mike Pelage, was your hand still?
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Mike.
I'll take it down. My apologies.
Okay. Sorry, Mason.
I don't think registrars who operate these kinds of services are going to give you that information. I think they'll view it as proprietary.
That's fine.
Yeah. I mean, I don't necessarily object to the question itself. I seriously doubt you're going to get the answer.
You may have the same comment with the next one. Yep. No, I'm sorry. The next one, what I don't think we were asking the actual registrars. I think that this would be gathered ourselves, and the intent was not to publicize this in any list of answers that might come out, but simply to use it in a global sense to understand what percentage of overall registrations have we covered. And the last question, and the last two should probably be inverted, is the registrar responding on behalf of a family of registrars or on behalf of themselves only?
Yeah, this is Ron again.
Yep.
And this comes back to the thing, we're not asking the registrars under this. This is our internal group, so there isn't any registrar responding. This is a collection of data from their public website.
Or retrieved by one-on-one discussion.
Oh, it does include one-on-one discussion? Okay.
To the extent that we cannot glean the information, ICANN will try to get it.
Okay.
Based on discussion. And maybe responding may be the wrong word, but do the questions correspond to a family or to an individual? I think we have come to closure. There's a couple of things we're going to reword from the list, or rather from the recording. There are one or two things that we said we would have, we may have further conversation on the list. At that point, we will send around in relatively short order the revised version of this. And next meeting, we may actually start beginning to talk about some substantive issues. The next meeting is... Why are you laughing?
I'm sorry. It's been a very long night for me. I don't know. I
All right. Our next call is scheduled for... Our next call is scheduled for next week at this time.
And this is Marika. If I can just add, for the next call, I hope to have a summary of the public comments that have been received. The public comment forum has been closed, but we did receive, I think, around 10 or 11 comments.
Excellent.
And another point that has been on the agenda for, I think, already two calls that we haven't been able to get to is the plans for the PDNR workshop or meeting in Seoul. It would be nice if we can put something on the website of what this, you know, the meeting is going to be about or what will be interesting for the broader audience. So maybe people can think about that for next week.
Well, since we don't have a questionnaire to go over again, hopefully we can move it closer to the top of the agenda and make sure we cover it.
It's Jeff. Can I ask one quick question?
You have 30 seconds left before the call expires. Yes, sir.
Okay. Can somebody send around, if we have it, the proposed date and time for the Seoul meeting? I don't know if that was made available.
I don't know when it is either. Marie, can you
know? Okay.
Last I heard it was Monday.
Yes, I think it's Seoul Monday, if I'm not mistaken, 2:30 or 3. But I'll confirm and send it to the list.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I thank you all for your participation, for your good humor. And Cheryl, I wish you luck in whatever is happening in your life right now.
This meeting's better than coffee, isn't it, Cheryl?
For those who didn't hear the beginning part, she's sitting in a hospital emergency waiting room waiting for the results of some tests on her son, I believe. Thank you, Cheryl. Thank you all.
Bye. You were more excited than Bubble Breaker. What can I say?
Bye.
Thanks, Ellen.
Bye.
Thank you for calling the Digital Replay Service.